The Guardian.
The Guardian Football Weekly Podcast.
Sure, skiing was fun, but near-Earth orbit, strap me in and let's party, it says here, as Football Weekly roars once more through an unsuspecting sky to round up what has been a mental week for some more than others. On the agenda, top archaeologists lead dig for White Hart Lane trophy cabinet as Spurs in silverware shocker. We look back on Sunday's Carling Cup victory. Eduardo's injury. Can the Croatian recover from a semi-detached ankle? And will the Gunners crack? There's continental news too. The Spanish title race back on thanks to the stupidest goal Real Madrid are ever likely to concede. We get the word on that from the doctor, Sid Lowe. In Serie A, there's Milan making the top four and why this time Juventus didn't lock the referee in the toilet. And in Rafa we trust as Herr Honeystone brings us the Zeitung on the Bundesliga and a bad week for Bayern and Bremen. All that plus your posts and more in Football Weekly.
Stand by for Guardian Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Hello all. Well, joining me in a pod festooned with Welcome Back Bunting, it's hello to Barry Glendinning.
Hello, James.
Paul Doyle.
Hello, James.
And you, Kevin McCarra.
Hi, James.
And many thanks to Rob Curling, who's, of course, returned to his great gig in the sky. Welcome back, boys, from your holiday, I might say. Your Jimbo holiday.
Oh, right, sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent.
How did you get on the piste? Did you come a cropper at all? Your slidey holiday?
I pushed the envelope. You know, I'm willing to take a few risks. I'm not afraid of
snow.
No. Death. Indeed not.
Snow and gravity, at least a combination.
Other skiers, yeah, right. No, it was all good. Thank you very much. Shall we move on? Football? Oh, terrific. Okay. Carling Cup, Kevin, you were there.
I was indeed, and how thoroughly deserved it was by Spurs. I think Chelsea fans must be furious. Chelsea led 1-0 without doing a great deal, thanks to the traditional Spurs stupidity of the goalkeeper leaving a huge gap for a free kick to go into. But I keep on coming back to Chelsea. It was a really misconceived mess of a display for which Avram Grant must take much of the blame.
Well, the knives are out for Grant, yeah?
Well, yeah, I mean, to watch £15 million Nicolas Anelka playing in the left wing, it's as if he couldn't make his mind up. He thought, well, I have to get Drogba and Anelka both in the team, but I'm scared to play 4-4-2 because I like to get five men in midfield, blah, blah, blah. I know, I'll play Nicolas as a left midfield player. It wasn't a solution at all, it was a cop-out. Mm. And Avram Grant has been lucky in a sense, it sounds bizarre, but he's had a lot of players missing and the team has picked itself and no one's been paying much attention and they've been winning games. He's had two high profile games recently, home to Liverpool in the Premiership when they had to win and drew 0-0 in a really hideous afternoon. And yesterday, where Chelsea didn't really use the most of the talent at their disposal, and it was made worse by the fact that Wander Ramos, of course, manipulated the squad cleverly throughout the game, making it more attacking when need be, more defensive when need be, which is what a top manager does.
Anything you'd like to add to that, Barry?
I find it amusing that the knives appear to be out for Avram Grant, because he seemed to pick the team he thought the fans wanted and it wasn't up to the job. Leaving Balak on the bench was a very strange decision. Leaving Joe Cole on the bench was odd as well, and waiting so long to bring him on was even more odd. I wonder how much of a pernicious influence Mr. Lampard and Terry had in the team selection. I don't know what goes on behind the scenes at Stamford Bridge, obviously, but I suspect that in a perfect world, Grant might have picked one of them, wouldn't have picked both, but I think Lampard should have been left out, and he was very ineffective on the field.
So was Drogba, of course, who has walked straight back into the team after a very bad African Nations Cup. And after the African Nations Cup, a lot of the Ivorian players revealed that he had an unsavoury influence over that team. He was, in effect, picking the team and didn't even bother putting in good performances to back it up. And last week at Panathinaikos, he didn't play well for Chelsea either. So you would have thought that if you wanted Anelka to get into the team, rather than squeezing him out on the left, he could have put him in instead of Drogba.
It's a fair shot.
I mean, I did the minute-by-minute report on the game, and I don't think I even mentioned Anelka until well into late in the game, or else early in injury time. It's just like he wasn't on the field.
It's as if he didn't have the guts to play with two forwards in a cup final.
But Spurs,
It's also worth pointing out, I think, that although Grant does have quite a good record in terms of number of wins to losses, against the other members of the Big Four, Arsenal, United and Liverpool, he's played them all and they haven't even scored a goal against them yet.
A telling statistic, that one. But what about Spurs, though? Is this the start of something big?
There's a lot still to be done. But yeah, I think they will go from strength to strength. There's things to be done. I mean, Zakora is too reckless to be a holding player. They don't really have a left back. They don't have a goalkeeper, to be frank. So, I mean, I think there's still acquisitions to be made, but you would assume Ramos is the man to do this job. Yeah. And I thought his sort of command of the game yesterday was very impressive.
So on the subject of goalkeepers, yes. I mean, obviously that was a terrible blunder by Robinson, particularly as Drogba had put a free kick to that side only moments previously. So I don't know why he didn't see that coming. But I thought Cech was unfairly maligned for the second goal. I didn't think that was a mistake for him. He actually made a good save initially from Woodgate, and it was just unfortunate that it rebounded onto Woodgate's
head.
Well,
he came for a ball but didn't take control of it.
Well,
it's not been a bad
season. How come none of the
Cech,
defenders went for the ball along with Woodgate? Someone was presumably marking him.
The marking was poor. Yeah.
I also think Cech had got a pile driver straight in the face a few minutes previously, and he did look a bit groggy.
It wasn't a pile driver, Barry.
There's a corner shot. Yeah,
I'd say there were little Tweety birds flying around his head.
Well, that's where he wears all that padding for.
I think, though, I mean, he's still an excellent goalkeeper, and he was good yesterday by and large, but there have been more. Mm. I mean, the 4-4 draw with Aston Villa wasn't its finest hour either. Yeah, so.
All right, very good. Well done, anyway, to Spurs. Commiserations to Chelsea and Chelsea.
I have noticed on the blog some Spurs fans are losing the run of themselves slightly now that they've won this trophy, talking about, oh, we'll kick on, qualify for the Champions League and start winning league titles in the next year or two. So while they're obviously entitled to be pleased that they've won this, it is only the Carling Cup.
Right.
Yeah.
Was anyone else touched by Robbie Keane's exuberant celebrations?
It obviously meant Robbie Keane looked like he was touched.
But I thought it was nice to see that he was acutely aware, obviously, that so far he has unfulfilled he hasn't fulfilled his potential despite all the money he's earned and the glamorous transfers and glamorous life he leads. Well, he knew that he wasn't a proper superstar yet. And I don't know if
now he's got
winning the Carling
Cup medal
actually makes it's a step in the right direction.
Absolutely.
At least.
Maybe a UEFA Cup medal too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Quite
yeah.
possible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it worth mentioning as well the complete lack of good grace with which Chelsea's players.
I'm surprised,
took
Barry,
their
you want to bring that up.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm getting really, really fed up with them. You know, you're supposed to be impartial in that, but it's hard not to, you know, experience a frisson of schadenfreude when you see the way, even when the ref blew up the game, surrounded by Chelsea players who were bitching and pissing and moaning at him, and they had to be escorted away from him.
That's just probably the ultimate proof that it is still Mourinho's team.
It does remind me, Barry, you wonder what Capello's there, and maybe thinking about the captaincy, does he really regard John Terry as a suitable leader for the national team?
Well, if he's even going to feature in the national team.
If he is, yeah. If he is. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's move on anyway, fine though that match was, to the rest of the action from the league. And the big story, of course, elsewhere was Eduardo and that horrific injury to his ankle. Plenty of impassioned points made on in the posts about whether Martin Taylor should be playing again, whether it's intentional, etc., etc., whether Arsenal are in some way singled out for rough treatment because of the almost defeatly technical nature of the game they play. But I think most people would say that it was unfortunate how much damage he was showing. He was probably trying to make Eduardo know that he was in a game, but nothing more than that. Would you say?
You certainly can't say it's intentional. I don't think it's that I'll go and destroy this man's career potentially. I don't think that'd even cross a player's mind. It wasn't kung fu, it wasn't off the ground with both feet, but it was dangerous. Yes, it was a bad tackle, and I think it did deserve a red card, but I don't think it should be taken any further than that.
It was very high though. I mean,
if you look at the photograph, it's the ankle height, obviously, right?
Well, it's halfway up the shin.
Well, yeah, I don't know, right? But
I think Taylor is a big clumsy lummox, and Eduardo is nimble and quick, and that probably didn't help, you know. I think it was just a clumsy challenge, and calling for Taylor to be banned forever is ridiculous. But I've only seen this tackle once because Sky have appointed themselves official nannies of the state and won't let us see it again, you know. And that is what annoys me most about the whole affair, is who the hell do they think they are to decide what we should and should not be allowed to see? I pay my subscription to see the game. Show me the tackle.
No, if you show UFC, etc., you can show Eduardo's ankle, perhaps.
They've shown a lot of other atrocities in their time, you know. Liverpool-Chelsea being the most recent that springs to mind.
Now, regarding his chances of coming back, I was just wondering, Paul, because people have been comparing this to various other injuries, and Gibril Cissé has had two particularly horrific injuries, and in his back scoring plenty of goals this season in the Championnat.
Yeah, I mean, I can't compare the injuries because I've no medical knowledge whatsoever. But obviously, mental fortitude is something that Jibril Cissé has showed in abundance, and I imagine that Eduardo will require that too.
Also, Alan Smith come back from the same injury, yeah. A freak one with no one near him against...
he's come back from it, but he's not come back the same player.
No, well... We can
yes, he has.
we can debate that one.
I mean, I think everyone hopes that it's not a career-ending injury, but you've got a lot of people who aren't doctors commenting, he will come back, he won't come back. We just don't know. Time will tell. Hopefully he will.
Hopefully he will, and it would be especially lovely if he could remain as good a player as he was promising to be. In the meantime, for Arsenal, exciting to see that they got the first goal scored by an English player in over a year. Theo Walcott there.
Cutting loose.
Take
at last.
That, haters. but will they crumble with Man United coming on strong?
I don't know about crumbling, but certainly the resources are pretty much stretched now.
When you look at their last few games, they had the disaster in the FA Cup, and then Champions League wasn't too inspiring, and the draw with Birmingham. Man United, how many points are United behind now?
Three.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can see that they were unsettled, of course, then just Eduardo. But having got 2-1 ahead, the game should be finished off, shouldn't it? They shouldn't have been hanging on in the last few seconds against 10 men, although it wasn't a penalty.
It wasn't a penalty?
I think it's Studs got the
ball. I don't think it was a penalty. No. But Emmanuel Adebayor could have finished it off by squaring the ball for Nicholas Bentner, and he refused to do so, which would suggest that relations are still frosty between the pair of them. Since that incident a few weeks ago, Adebayor clearly saw him, knew he was there, and yet didn't cross. And that would have been, game over. It's a worrying portent for the season ahead. We also had William Gallus's little sit-down protest, which was quite amusing. But I think some people have been making more of that than it actually was. He just lost his head completely, and these things happen.
Indeed they do. Well, with that, let's move on to part two in a second or two, where Sid Lowe, Dr. Sid, awaits.
This is Guardian Football Weekly.
Right, in the second part of Football Weekly, we travel now to Madrid to catch up with Sid Lowe. Sid, are you there?
I am here, James.
Hi, Sid. Congratulations, Sid.
Thank you very much.
You got your doctorate.
I did indeed, yeah.
On that fascism business.
On that fascism business.
Right. Unfortunately,
doctor of fascism.
Yes. Now, you're a doctor. What do you think about Eduardo's injury?
I think it would be probably the worst decision Arsenal ever made if they expected me to do anything about it.
Right.
Although it does look suspiciously like the broken ankle I had about 10 years ago, but there you go.
And how did you return to the same level or not?
No. Yeah.
All right. That's sad to hear, Sid. Listen, let's hear you operate, though, Dr. Sid, when you tell us, I borrowed that line from Eminem, of course.
Very good.
Yeah. When you tell us all about the exciting developments in the Liga, where I can't believe it. It's just 2 points now between Real Madrid and Barcelona. Why, Sid? Why?
Why? For a number of reasons, but the most immediate one is probably the funniest goal of the league so far, which was last night at the Bernabeu. Barcelona had just absolutely hammered Levante 5-1. Samuel Eto'o scored a hat-trick, the third of which was a fluke. He was trying to control it, and it went in. And Leo Messi was absolutely out of this world. So Barca went and won 5-1, meant Madrid went into their game with Getafe just 2 points ahead, but obviously with the assumption that they would win at home, because they hadn't won they hadn't failed to win at home in 18 games. Last time they'd even dropped a point at home was over a year ago. And so everybody thought, right, this is fine, no problem. Not only that, Getafe had two of their best players out. They had a whole load of players injured. And then with just over the hour in the second half, Raul latched onto a save by Pato Alonso-Seri, picked the ball up, turned it back into the six-yard box, and Aaron Robben scored. Robben scores, runs for the corner flag, jumping up and down, delighted. Real Madrid are 1-0 up. The lead at the top of the table is back to 5 points. Four or five players run over and jump on top of him, amazingly managing not to injure him. And they all celebrate and jump up and down. The linesman is standing right next to them, and they don't notice that the linesman is standing right next to them with his arm in the air and his flag in his hand. The goal's been disallowed for offside correctly, I might add. Meanwhile, Vanisori and Raul are sort of having a word with the referee in the penalty area about whether or not it should be correctly disallowed. Neither of them thought that while they were doing this, perhaps it would be a good idea to stop Getafe taking the free kick. So David Bellinger takes the free kick, gives it to Javier Casquero, who starts sprinting up the middle of the pitch. There is no one, absolutely no one, anywhere near him. He's just sprinting up the pitch. The whole of the stadium, almost pantomime style.
Behind you!
He's running through! I can't believe it! And he's bombing up the pitch. You've got two men join him. Guti tries to chase him, can't reach him. He plays the ball to, I think it was Pablo Hernandez who played it back to Uche. Uche put it in the back of the Madrid net with Iker unable to stop it. Actually, a very good finish, and it wasn't quite as easy a chance as it first appeared. 27 seconds from Robin putting the ball in the net to Getafe putting it in the net. And in a way, when you consider that it was right from one end of the pitch to the other, it shows you how in some ways, how slow Getafe were to do it and how slow Real Madrid were to react. And the look on Robin's face is absolutely priceless. That said, I think it would be unfair to claim it was all down to this really quite comic and ridiculous goal, because Madrid played very, very poorly again. They've now lost three on the trot and have been beaten six times in 2008.
So they seemed unable to, I mean, apart from that comedy, they seemed just unable to create many chances. I mean, as if the strain is getting to them at the top.
It does feel like it's getting to them to some extent. And you know, one of the things I've said a million times in the pod is they're a team without weaknesses. Well, suddenly those weaknesses that we didn't think they had, or I certainly didn't think they had, are coming to the surface. Defensively, they don't look quite as strong. But it's that they're not actually breaking teams down now. And it used to be that they had so much variety going forward that they would always find a way through. I do think the absence of Robinho is really, really important to them. I think they lack in that little bit of cutting edge. Raul, despite the big campaign about him getting back in the Spain squad, is quite up and down at the moment. He's not having a great time of it. Ruud van Nistelrooy now hasn't scored for six games. And they just couldn't find a way through. Bizarrely, in some ways, this set of defeats have come when they've actually played better than in previous games. And earlier in the year, they were playing awfully and winning. Now they're playing okay and losing. I thought they were pretty good against Roma away, but lost. All right, they were poor at Betis last week, but they're starting to get caught. And there is a fear. And one of the reasons is that there's even more fear than there might be, quite apart from the fact that it dropped from what looked like being an 11-point lead for them a couple of weeks ago to now 2, is the fact that Bernd Schuster's sides traditionally have always collapsed in the second half of the season. So there's a fear that, hang on a minute, might the same thing be about to happen?
Wow. Sid, where are you? What are the strange noises in the background?
I can't actually hear any strange noises.
No?
I'm in Madrid at the moment, no.
Oh, okay.
So it's like a loud whooshing sound.
Yeah. It might be Paul.
That might actually be my laptop, which has got a disc in it going round. That may well be the noise.
Ah, right. What are you watching?
I'm not watching anything. I was listening to some music while I was writing the column.
Right. You listen to music and write a column at the same time.
It's multitasking, isn't it?
Crikey.
That's why he's a doctor and you're not.
He's a Renaissance man, in fact.
Is that all you have to do?
What is the motivational music you listen to? Eye of the Tiger?
No, exactly. Yeah. I'm listening to Eye of the Tiger and I Will Survive to get me through the hardships of writing this column.
Sid, no, I was watching the...
No, he's going to tell us what the music is, Barry. Tell us, Sid.
I actually listened to The Killers, I must confess.
Oh, all right.
Sorry.
Barry, over to you.
No, Sid, I was watching the game last night and the expression on the face of the Madrid president was priceless when the goal went in. But has he posited any big conspiracy theories or accepted that it was just a shocker on his team's part?
He actually hasn't, but this is quite interesting in a way, because in midweek, Ramon Calderon, who as we all know is a man more than capable of shooting his mouth off and saying ridiculous things, he came out and he said, look, a big club like us can't complain about referees. We shouldn't do it. A big club doesn't do that kind of thing. A big club is above all of that. Bernd Schuster in a press conference in midweek said, well, I don't care what he says. I'm going to continue moaning about referees if I want to. And actually, Schuster didn't moan about it, but sporting director Predrag Mijatovic after the game did complain, and he said, well, I thought the referee should have stopped the play on the grounds, presumably, that it wasn't Real Madrid who were about to score.
Very curious comment, that one. Listen, elsewhere, just a very quick thing. Valencia, I see that they're creeping back up the table again, Sid, despite everything.
Well, they sort of are. They won two on the trot, but this weekend could only draw against Recreativo, although the truth is they should have got more. They had a lot of chances. But, of course, the big news for Recre this week, for Valencia this week, was that they were in court for the David Albelda case.
Ah.
Quite comic scenes of Albelda sitting next to the president, Juan Soler, the two of them looking fixedly forward, refusing to even look at each other, to talk to each other at all. The judge, in brilliant legal style, said, right, next week I will deliver a sentence. So, obviously, this week coming, I think it's going to be Thursday, I will deliver a sentence, which means you've got 6 days to come
my word
to an agreement.
Right,
yeah, and whether or not they'll come to an agreement, I think is very unlikely. But Valencia is just a complete circus at the moment. The
Barry's got a really sentence he wants right. to deliver. Go on, Barry.
Sid, there was a little story in The Observer yesterday about which Guti is preparing to take legal action against the newspaper because they published a picture of him kissing a man and outed him, basically. And it turns out the man was his sister.
But strangely, he appears to be kissing his sister on the mouth.
Here's the question mark. Is it worse to kiss a man or worse to be involved in incest? although I suspect the lawyers may have to cut that out. I mean, allegedly, right. you know...
Well, yeah, exactly. What happened was a magazine called Cuore published a photograph of Guti appearing to kiss a man, and the photo was a tiny bit grainy, but it did very much look like a man. It turns out, or it appears to have turned out, that this person was, in fact, his sister, although, as you say, he's kissing her full on the lips, or him full on the lips. And, of course, Guti has a little bit of history for this, because Guti's famous in Spain for having gone out with someone called Bibiana Fernandez, who is now a strapping six-foot block woman, but used to be a man.
Sid, on that note, we'll leave you this week. Again, congratulations. And feel free to turn your killers back up. And we'll catch up with you on Thursday.
Hope so. Cheers.
Thanks, Doctor. Right. Post. Thanks to Postmaster General Compton. In Compton, sorry. Who's fresh, straight out of Compton, presumably. And he says he actually watches the show on Satanta. It's the only regular piece of programming that is any good. Many thanks to you, Postmaster General. Antipode in Cork, confusingly, asked us to discuss the A-League Grand Final, which took place this weekend. And Crocodile Wenger in Parramatta, Australia, does the honours for us. Newcastle United winning their first trophy for many years. Sadly for the Georges, it happened in Sydney yesterday afternoon when they beat Central FC Coast Marinas, is that right? Central Coast Marinas, maybe. 1-0. And they've qualified now for the Asian Champions League. That's big news, isn't it? Manco in Bangkok. It's quite exciting how far-flung our efforts are. No? The broadness of our reach. Yeah, I find it quite exciting. Anyway, Manco in Bangkok says, doesn't like the artsy-fartsy guff spouters who review books and music and films for The Guardian, but he likes what we say. Any chance of having a part four in the pod where we talk about movies and tunes and stuff like that? Kevin has been to the cinema, famously. Yes. And Barry, didn't you once go to a gig?
Yeah, I did indeed, yes.
Yeah.
I was checking my list, actually, the other day. I've been to, I think, six movies and three gigs this year so far.
Wow, right.
Thank God There Will Be Blood didn't win the Oscar for Best Film. It's very mediocre.
Right. You saw a film, didn't you, this weekend?
Yeah, but I'm embarrassed. You know? It was popular. Yeah. It's a 90-minute film. I've seen maybe more, but it's really about an hour's worth of entertainment. I think a TV drama would be better, but the girl, the main character, is fantastic.
Thumbs down from Kevin.
I thought Juno, which I saw on Friday, was excellent. I would like to add, myself and Kevin aren't going to the cinema together. Right. We always seem to go and see the same things at the same time. I thought Juno was a gem of a movie, and I was a bit disappointed that Ellen Page didn't win the Best Actress Oscar.
Do you think it's a bit overextended?
Speaking of overextended, coming up in part three, we get the lowdown on everything in the Bundesliga, and also we'll round up the situation in Italy as well.
The Guardian Football Weekly Podcast.
Part three, and stand by for my Italy roundup. Crayons at the ready, Barry, because it's been another exciting weekend in Italy, which I intend to go on about at some length.
Great.
Yeah. Oh, lots of goals. You'll be excited. 35 of them. There were two matches which each had eight goals. Marco Borriello got a hat-trick in Genoa's fantastic win at Udinese, but you don't want to hear about that.
Stabbings?
Not that I know of. You might be interested to know that Inter's poor run of form continues. They had a draw with Sampdoria in Genoa. Antonio Cassano continuing his fine current form. He scored his sixth of the season, smiling all over the place. It was a good goal. And I think the campaign is really beginning to gather pace now to get him back in the Italy side. He's got a bit of previous with them. He walked out on a junior Italy training camp once, and he's been seen as a bit of a disruptive influence. But there's no question that he's playing his best football in years at Samp. And he celebrated. On Channel 5, I was amused to see that he did this big thing where he pointed to himself and then pointed to the ground. And they said, oh, he's giving it the big I am. But he was actually saying, I'm staying here, because he's on loan from Real Madrid. And he said, I'm going to take a 20% pay cut or something.
Can I ask you a question? Yeah, the really factual thing. Ibrahimovic and Cruz didn't play yesterday. Are they doubtful at all for the return leg with Liverpool?
That's an interesting question. Inter, who with that draw have seen their lead slip to just a mere 9 points. Roma, meanwhile, beating Fiorentina, who've lost Adrian Mutu for up to 2 months with ligament damage. But anyway, they have announced that the reason that Ibrahimovic has been completely shocking in all the games we've seen him in recently is that he's got a knee injury as well, and he's almost certainly going to miss their big showdown with Roma, which is coming up this Wednesday night. So that could potentially reopen the Italian title race. Roma are playing away to Inter, but they've won that match before. in recent years. So we shall see about that. But anyway, there you go. Cassano hopefully continuing that form, because it's great to have him back and banging them in. Juventus, meanwhile, midweek are facing the Turin derby against their neighbours Torino, Barry. And Juve are fuming after losing 2-1 on the weekend at Regina. The referee, to be fair, had a shocker. He ignored two perfectly valid penalty claims for Juve and then gave one to Regina right at the end, which enabled them to win the match. And it's been heralded this as a bit of a sign of the way times are changing in Italy, because 3 years ago there was an infamous defeat for Juve at Regina, which led to Luciano Moggi, the then godfather of all things Italian football, taking the referee and locking him up in the toilet and then, and then leaving for the airport with the key in his pocket. Worst of all, there was no paper. But this time around, nothing of the kind. They've been reduced to writing an open letter to the Federation asking for a bit more care and consideration.
But that's my supplementary question. Do referees feel they have to give Juve a good clap around the ear all the time to show their independence?
That's the very theory that Juve are saying, that there's this kind of reverse prejudice.
And do you think they're getting a bad run of...
The Gazzetta, I haven't watched all of Juve's games this season, but the Gazzetta, when they published 2 or 3 weeks ago their infamous what the table would look like if all the referees' decisions had gone the right way, Juve they had on top, which is interesting. Yeah, they have suffered. There's been a couple of games and there have been some very bad decisions against them. And whether it's a conspiracy or whether, as you say, it's just the referees straining to show how much they're not under Juve's thumb. And interesting, the guy, Dondrini, the guy who was involved on Saturday, was the same guy who was previously seen as being very pro-Juve. In fact, there's this famous, one of the more famous phone tap conversations between one of the referees, Pareto, who was controlling the referees, and this guy, Dondrini. Dondrini was being sent up to referee a Juventus game, and there's this curious instruction that Pareto says, you must see everything, even that which is not there. But anyway, those were the bad old days. And these are the new days. Anyway, but Milan, one other thing to mention. Milan now into the top four. And they've moved past Fiorentina on goal difference. And, of course, Fiorentina lacking Adrian Mutu, who's far and away their standout player. That's going to hurt them in weeks to come. But Milan just beating Palermo last night with a goal from Pippo Inzaghi. And get this, it was his first goal in 13 months. Kaká, though, going off at half-time with continued problems with his knees, which had kept him out before the Arsenal game. And I think that might be a bit of a worry for Rossoneri fans, because it looks like... that problem is far, far from resolved.
I think you mean his first La Liga goal in 13 months. They have scored.
Oh, no, he scored Champions League, and he scored in Athens. Mm. Sorry, first in the league. Yeah, fair point, Kevin. And Barry, anything to add?
An old friend of yours, Paul Gascoigne, was in the news last week.
Oh, yeah.
He got sectioned or taken away by the police and then sectioned. And I noticed on your Satanta show on Friday, Mark Bosnich said, you know, I can identify with Gaza's problems, blah, blah. And he was very critical of Gaza's celebrity chums.
Right.
You know, back when he was a famous footballer and one of the lads, he was surrounded by flunkies
and
acolytes.
No idea where this is going. But yeah.
And, you know, Bozzy was wondering, you know, where are those celebrity chums now? You used to be a chum of Gaza's.
That's right. And I tell you, if Bosnich ever gets into trouble, he better not come knocking on my door.
Yeah. So have you been a rock of support for Gaza in these troubled times?
I think we both know that I have. Barry. But I don't like to talk about it in public. Tremendously sad what's happened to Gaza. Don't know what else we can say about it, really, except that...
you owe him your entire career. And the least you could do is send him a get-well-soon card.
Well,
I think
that's true.
We could say that.
That is true. It's true. I got my job doing Italian football because Gaza went to Italy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then proved so bad at the presenting that I was allowed to have a pop.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, well, there you go. Yeah. Well, get-well-soon, Gaza.
I don't know how you can sleep at night, Richardson. That poor fella,
yes.
All the trouble he's gone through.
Well, indeed.
Look
as
at
are
you,
many,
sitting here smug. Yeah.
Right, we'll just move on then. Raphael Honigstein, that's right. Let's call up Raphael Honigstein for a quick update before we sign off on the Bundesliga. Raphael, joining us now on the line from the Süddeutsche Zeitung. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you, James?
I'm good. And you've got a merry chuckle in your voice. Is it something to do with the events this weekend in Germany's top division?
Yes, perhaps. Yeah, I'm not sure how much of them I can share because it's all about rude gestures and terrible insults flying on and off the pitch.
But wow, come to that place.
I do my best to convey them in an acceptable manner.
Right, and telephonically, which is always difficult.
Yes, all sorts of disagreeable stuff going on. None the least at Frankfurt, where Werder Bremen had Diego sent off in a sort of Materazzi-Zidane replay-type incident.
What did he say?
Well, Kyriakos, the Frankfurt defender, who's a big man and has a very hairy face, said something to Diego along the likes of get up and...
If it's any help, Raphael, you are allowed to use profanity in the Guardian if it's a quote from someone else. So
okay.
Go for your life.
I'm just taking my
headphones off.
Yes. Well, now he said, get up and fuck you, according to Diego. Lip-reading experts had a slightly different interpretation. According to them, he said, get up, I fuck you. But regardless of that nicety, Diego obliged, sadly.
Well, how far did he oblige?
Well, he got up and slammed straight into Kyriakos and, of course, got him sent off. So Kyriakos' ruse ploy worked, and Werder duly went on to go 1-0 down.
My word. How do you say that in German then, Rafael, just in case?
No, he said it in English.
Oh!
You know, how would a Greek man and a Brazilian communicate? So, yes, he said it in English.
The international language of love, by the sound of things.
That's right. And then, continuing on that theme, perhaps the other notable incident happened long after the game between Stuttgart and Karlsruhe, which is a bit of a local derby and always hotly contested, was over. Stuttgart had won 3-1, but afterwards Mario Gomez, the German international, came in front of a live TV camera and said, you know,
a bit like Ashley Young, no?
Yeah, I always respect my opponents on the pitch, but I have to tell you, Mike Franz, the Castle defender, he's a real arsehole.
That's the kind of respect we can understand here in this pod. So now,
he's getting into trouble for that.
And rightly so. Werder lost then amidst all that Diego unpleasantness.
Werder lost. Bayern and Hamburg only drew 1-1 each. At home to Bayern, so no real movement at the top, but in the midst of this, Mark van Bommel didn't want to be left out and of course got himself sent off as well with a very rude gesture towards the referee on the 90th minute. So and not that many goals this week, but plenty of other action.
Well, indeed so. And presumably, given the length of the winter break in the Bundesliga, there's loads more matches still to go. So the 4 points are by no means a prohibitive barrier between Werder Bremen and success.
No, 13 games still to go. Bayern have got a very big one coming up again on Saturday, away to Schalke, who in typical Schalke fashion, of course, lost again, and we're very close to challenging for the title, but now are back to sort of not really knowing whether they're coming or going, which is the usual modus operandi.
Right.
And it's still very tight because Leverkusen winning at against Schalke at home means that the race for the European places is still very much on.
Yeah, Leverkusen and Hamburg tied on 38 points in third and fourth place, and the top three go into the Champions League, yes?
That's right. Woof. Absolutely.
All right then. Raphael, that's fantastic. And
Thank you.
You have a safe week. And no doubt you'll be back to regale us with all the excitements of that Schalke Bayern clash.
Yeah, I'll try my best.
Very, very good indeed. And that brings us to the end of today's pod experience. So many thanks to everybody involved, notably Barry Glendinning, Paul Doyle, and Kevin McCarra, and producer Patrick, and you posters and listeners worldwide, wherever you may be. We'll be back on Thursday, and we look forward to speaking to you then.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.